Wednesday, the 5th of December, first day of Hanukkah, Rabbi Raphael Berish, the light that never goes out.
I must apologize for yesterday, but I don't think anybody else would have done any different, and I didn't even have time to ask the Shaila. It was a very interesting day, actually, because we started off with the bris, and it was supposed to be the shir, and then was at the Sheva Brachas as well. One should always have such simchas. There was also a slight change in the program besides yesterday, when I was supposed to say a few words. It was nothing to do with Hanukkah at the time, and I thought up of a title, and I thought I put the title in the text, but it didn't get there. And the title was "Life is a Chess Game," and I revert back to that particular subject. We all know, I think, that Chol HaMoed, Pesach or Sukkot, has become a time where one takes one's children on outings. Outings. You ask any child, any school girl or boy, what do you do Chol HaMoed? And they'll say, they go to the zoo, they go to outings. I think also, as far as children are concerned as well, that Hanukkah, you ask them what they do, and they'll say play dreidel. They play dreidel. And therefore Hanukkah has become a time, certainly for the children, where one plays games. Not only dreidel, there are others, they tell me, who play cards, and there are others who play other games, and there are those who play chess. And when I was a little younger and living in Letchworth with Rabbi Sassoon Zeichet Tzadik Livrocha, he used to play with me chess on Hanukkah. And I asked him once, why do you play chess on Hanukkah? So he said, you are still very young. One day you can work it out for yourself. And come up since that day, every Hanukkah I've been trying to work out why on earth does one play chess, and why did he say that to me? As he said, when you get older, I thought, I understood that would mean when you're more mature. So I waited many, many years until I thought I was mature and started thinking about it again. And I'd like to share with you, as they say, some thoughts on chess and hopefully bring it home. With a game of chess, you need an opponent. This opponent we can classify as the Yetzer Hara. When you play chess, you must think very, very carefully every move that you make. Once you have made that move, you can't move back. You're also given various armory to help you fight that opponent. That armory, some go one way, some go another way, some go opposite, some go straight, some go diagonally. Some even jump. And there's one that Kamat will do anything you want. Anything you want. And that is the queen. The queen can almost do anything that any other piece can do. And I thought maybe one can say the queen is the tyrant. What else? The queen is the tyrant. And through the tyrant, one can achieve anything. There's nothing that one can't achieve through the Torah. they even say that you find not only today's, always been that way, exceedingly wealthy Jewish people, exceedingly clever Jewish people. And you look around and sometimes inward it's a little bit of an embarrassment to us, because you can open a newspaper and there's another Jew mentioned and another Jew mentioned. In any or various aspects of life, the Jews seem to get to the top. And my Rebbe, the Rakov Zechazan the Rakov, once said, why is that? What do you have to creak to the top for? What happens? So he said, the Rebbeinu Sholom has put in each and every one of us a cheshik, a lust for bettering ourselves, a lust really for Torah. Each and one and every one of us in different ways have got a tshuka, a want, an urge for Torah. What happens if you don't use that urge? What happens if you don't use that tshuka for Torah? You've got it, so you'll use it for something else. So one will use it to make money, one will use it to become famous, one will use it to become clever, and they'll become clever, famous, and wealthy. Because that tshuka is there in every yid. That's the Torah, that's the queen. But I believe that the main tachlis of the queen in a chess game is to protect the king. To protect the king. Although it doesn't always manage to do it. But it's there basically to protect the king. And very often the way you do that is to knock out your opponent. Just knock his pieces off. The more you knock off the pieces of your opponent, the easier it is for you to beat your opponent. And the interesting thing is that you don't finish a game of chess by knocking all the pieces off. Not at all. You win a game of chess by trapping the king. If you've trapped the king, you've won. And a clever person, these chess masters, can trap the king in two or three moves with all your pieces on the board. And if you're not so good, it takes you a lot longer. And it can take sometimes hours and hours and hours. And sometimes it can take that you have to beat the opponent and take away from all his pieces before you win the game. Maybe that's what he meant. I never had the opportunity to ask him again what he meant, although I did ask his children and they said they didn't know what he meant. But that was that great man himself. He didn't always tell you an answer. He asked you a question and you yourself had to think of the answer. And I've actually carried this through wherever I can, to ask questions and not to give answers. It creates a tremendous interest in the person and the closeness you can get by then trying to work out an answer. Okay, maybe nice, maybe not nice, but this is supposed to be a shiur, so try to connect it somehow loosely to the Sedra. We find in the Sedra that when Yosef interpreted the dreams to Paroi, the Torah says afterwards that Paroi spoke to Yosef in the following way. And he said, Vayomer Paroi Yosef, Acharei Hodiah Elokim Oischa Eskol Zois, after Hashem has revealed to you and has shown to you all this that you're telling me, a Navon v'chochom kamaycha. There's no Navon v'chochom like you. Doesn't exist a more brilliant person than you. Therefore, atot yal besi valpichoch yishak kolami rak hakise agoda mimimcho ane vayose paroi estabatoi mi al yodoi vayiten oisoi al yad yosef. Gebalt. Paro says, oh, you've interpreted the dream to me as nishtokem chochem. There's nobody greater than you. First of all, what was so gewaltig with Yosef's dream, was Yosef's interpretation more than the others? We know, if you look in the Medrash, that others also interpret Paro's dream. The famous one, seven daughters, get married, killed, blah, blah, blah. But look in the Medrash, there's many other interpretations. And Paro will mevatel all of them. No, none. Yosef comes along. Seven cows, 7 years, seven seeds, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, that's it. What? We're not talking about what the Rabbeinu Shalom was doing. We're talking what's going on in Paro's head. Why did this appeal to him more than anybody else? The Gemara in Brachos seems to say, at the end, when it talks about Chalomus, and I'm not sure whether one recommends to learn those couple of blocks of Gemara. They are exceedingly difficult to understand. They talk about dreams that you cannot imagine. If you think kids get nightmares at night thinking about dreams, try learning those blocks of Gemara. But the Gemara does say that usually one dreams at night with what you do during the day. The things you associate yourself during the day, you dream that. The Gemara says that you'll never dream that an elephant going through the eye of a needle. Because usually one doesn't think about that sort of thing. So you'll never dream about it. You'll only dream about this. Whatever they told Paro was all personal. Was all personal things. Paro knew he was Melech Mitzrayim. He was Melech over the most mightiest country in the world at the time. And he was associated day in and day out, 24/7 as they say, with the Malchus of Mitzrayim. So when he dreams at night, he can only dream about his Malchus, what's happening in his country, what's happening to his people, what's happening to the nation. And everybody interpreted it as a personal thing. He knew that couldn't be. It couldn't be. I'm not concerned with personal things during the day. And therefore, when Yosef came along, and he said, this dream is about Mitzrayim, then that made more sense. That made sense. There's going to be years of plenty. There's going to be years of famine. Oh, that made sense. Okay. That made sense to Paro. Fine. But now he knows there's going to be 7 years of plenty. There's going to be 7 years of famine. Do me a favor. Do you have to be the most chochm in the world to know how to conduct that? If I'm told, for the next 7 years, I'm going to get a salary. The next 7 years after that, I'm not going to earn a penny. I'm not going to earn a salary at all. I don't have to go to my bank manager and ask him, Gaval, what do I do? During these 7 years, I use what I need, mamish, and whatever spare I'll put away all the surplus, all the plenty, so when the 7 years of famine come, I've got enough. So what did Yosef, the great Sechokha, mean to have this Ebed, Nahid, Paro needed him like a locking cop. He could have got anybody to organize himself. The 7 years of plenty should be put away, only given those who need, and as much as they need, so therefore the next 7 years should be enough for the rest. Why didn't he do that? Why did he need a Chochem? Because it's not just the question of putting away. If it's a question of putting away, that's fine. But who's going to decide? Am I capable of deciding exactly what I want, exactly what I need, what I'm going to need tomorrow, how I'm going to... That is not so easy. It sounds easy, just put away what you don't use. But what do I need to use? What's coming? What do I anticipate? How should I put it away? Do I just leave it in the bank with 2% interest, or do I invest it in stocks and shares, or do I invest it in property? How am I supposed to use at best these 7 years of plenty? That's where Paro needed a chochem. Because the previous pasuk actually says, Vayomer Paro el avodov. He says to his servants, any of you can do this? Have we got anybody who's got this Ruach Elokim, this Ruach HaKodesh, this spiritual spirit, not only to interpret dreams, but is able to organize a whole country, and not a whole country, says the Medrash, has brought down the whole world, is going to rely on Mitzrayim for the 7 years of famine. So we need a chochem. Maybe that's here as well. You think any Tom, Dick and Harry can play a game of chess? Sure. Put out the pieces. You ask a kid, say, right, play. You take a pawn, put it there. Take a horse, put it there. Take a bishop, not a bishop. It'll take this and put it there. You play around. I've had a game of chess, Machaya. What are you talking about? That's not a game of chess. Do you know how many rules there are in chess? I knew I had a book of chess, maybe from Robertson's desk. So I got it out, the thick book like that, from 1956. And it's got the results of the countries, different chess things, but in the beginning, it's got the rules. Unbelievable. I don't believe anybody knows how to play chess. Tremendous amount of rules. There are rules to the game. You can't just move around what you want. And when you look at the middle of a chess game, you say, what's going on here? There's a piece there. They're all in different places. That's not how it started. So nicely in order, and you move it in order. It's all a balagan. No, but that balagan is your chess game. Yosef had in front of him the 7 years of plenty, beautifully going to be laid out. But how does he play the game? How does he organize it? What does he do? And if you just think about it, that we maybe, let's say you've got to save for a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, or somebody takes a sabbatical and takes a year off, the planning involved to make sure when you come back, you've still got your house, you've still got all your things, etc. Tremendous amount of organization is needed for that. This chess game of life is very much so. We basically all start off the same. Basically, we all have the same pieces. But some choose to go this way, some choose to go that way, some choose to go that way. The tachlis is the same. The tachlis is to take the Torah and beat the Yetzer Hara. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the Torah, says the Gemara in Kedushin, but he's also the Yetzer Hara, but he's also created the Torah Tavlin. There's only one thing that will beat our opponent. One thing that will beat the Yetzer Hara, and that's Torah. And that's Torah. And it's such a beautiful, wonderful, gewaltige Sach that one starts the day with a few words of Torah. It is absolutely beautiful. Those who thought it up, and those who continue doing it, and believe me, I saw just the last few days what it means, 11 o'clock at night, 11:30 at night, just making sure, because this one couldn't do it, and backwards and forwards, to give us all an opportunity to learn a few words of Torah. May I just finish with something that I personally believe goes very much together with the learning of Torah. And I'm not going to say it's a coincidence, but I came in and Rabbi Yanki there was giving a shiur, and he mamish mentioned these words. If I'm not mistaken, he said the words, as your face is a Rishus HaRabim. Those words. I've mamish got those words down here. And I'll tell you how. I'll tell you how. It's actually a well-known vort, but I'm never afraid to say a well-known vort, because we need, if it's a well-known vort, one needs to chazr it over again and again. When Yaakov eventually came to Mitzrayim with his sons, we know the famous pasuk, what says, Vayove Yosef es Yaakov, Vayove Yosef es Yaakov, Oviv v'yamidehu lifnei paro. You have to understand that. I mean, today we understand it better than possibly they did before. You've got two leaders. You've got the leader of Israel, and you've got the leader of Egypt. And you're going to bring them together for a peace talk. So they're coming together. Two leaders of two nations, of two countries, they're coming together. It's the first thing they're supposed to do is to shake hands and get a photograph. And then they talk about the world, shattering things that's going on in the world, tremendous things. Never, ever will you find it in history that one world leader meets the other leader and the first thing he says to him, Kama yamei shnei chayecha. How old are you, mate? How old are you? And you know something? This is the only recorded message in the Torah that Yaakov ever said to, that Paro ever said to Yaakov. This is the only discussion recorded in the Torah. How old are you? Nope. Yaakov's asked the question, so he answers it. Vayomer Yaakov, and Yaakov says El Paro to Paro, Yemei Shenei Megurei, the days of the years of my difficult life, Shleishim Mamash Shono, is 130 years. Ma'at V'roim Hoyu Yemei Shenei Chayim. There are a few, and they were very, very difficult. Ma'at, there are a few, because he hadn't yet reached the age of his father, and he says, Roim, they were difficult. And we know the life of Yaakov was very difficult. Not time now to go through the history of Yaakov Inu, but go through the history of Yaakov Inu, even before he was born, he had a Mulchama. Right to the end of his life, he had it difficult. So he's correct in what he was saying. No problem with that. But the Rabbeinu Sholom knows that too. And the tzoras we are given in life, the problems we're given in life, are also for a tachlis. But even if we can't appreciate that, appreciate at least the good things that happened in your life. You got Yosef back. You got Dina back. You established the Shvatim. You won with Esav. You won with Laban. From Laban you became a very wealthy man. That's Reim. That's bad. That should dilute all the bad that's happened to you. A goy king stands in front of you and says, how are you? So tell him how old you are. Don't tell him your life has been a life of misery and difficulties, etc., etc. What do you achieve about that? We can't say it, but Chazal say it, the Rambam brings it down, and this is also Medrash. Yaakov was punished for that. Yaakov was punished for every word that he said about his life. He was punished 33 years that he lost for every word that he said. Every word that he said, one word, he lost a year of his life. But if you count them up, you'll find there are eight short. There are eight short. So how is that a cheshbon that he lost a year of his life for every word he said? He only said 25 words, not 33. And the Rishonim say, you know what it is? You take the words of the question of Paro. Vayomer Paro El Yaakov, Kama Yemei Shnei Chayecho. How old are you? 8 words. Take the question of Paro, and you've got the 8, 33 words you used, and therefore 33 years, you're going to lose your life. Don't be fair, that's not fair. Okay, 25 I understand. I shouldn't have said that. Fine. But what has it got to do with me? The parents' question, you asked me how old I am. So I lose those years? Say Chazal, yes you do. As the Bianchi just said before, you know why you lose it? Why should Paro ask you how old are you? He's never asked any other diplomat how old he is. Why should he ask Yaakov how old he is? Because Yaakov looked old and worn out and miserable. And he wasn't that age to look like that. So the first thing that hit Paro was, from my information, that you shouldn't be that old. How old are you? You look like such an old man. So he said, I look an old man like that because of the sorrows I've had in my life. If he hadn't have looked like that, he hadn't have given Paro the opportunity to ask him the question, then he would have saved 8 years of his life. Can you imagine 8 years of Yaakov Avinu's life?
33.
No, 25 he'd lost anyway. Correct. So, thank you very much. He's all 33, correct. He wouldn't have lost anything, correct. So Yaakov Avinu should lose a year of his life, can you imagine? So that is the important thing I wanted to finish with as well. Our faith is not ours as far as that's concerned. Believe it or not, people look at our face more than we look at our face. However many times you look in the mirror, it's insignificant to the number of times that people look at you. If that is so, as Rabbi Yanki said, then our face is not ours. Our face belongs to the Rabbin. If our face belongs to the Rabbin, then it's my responsibility to see that my face has always got a smile. And if you've always got a smile, then you go to this man who will take your photograph of you, and then you can put the photograph in front of you, and then you can see what you're supposed to be like for the rest of your life. We need to smile, especially today. Each and every one of us have got sorrows. There is no question about it, because that's the tachlis of the world. And one doesn't want to hear or know or about somebody else's Torah. We've got enough of our own, except if we can help somebody else. Nevertheless, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is kind to us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is good to us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does so many other things to us. That we have to let everybody know as well. And that we let know, says the Torah quite clearly, by smiling, by showing people. He hasn't got any Torah. This guy has got no Torah. He's got such a smile on his face. Nobody's going to come up to him and say, excuse me, how old are you? Kadosh Baruch Hu should help, that we should all have a freilich Chanukah, a nice smile to Chanukah, and we should be zeicher, mirz Hashem, this Chanukah still, to be Yerushalayim, where we'll be all smiling with Mashiach. Amen.